This is the North Georgia Life Podcast. Embrace life where you live. Welcome back to the North Georgia Life Podcast. It's Jake, your host. Today, I'm with primarily Bob. Bev was on a call during most of our recording, but this is a family that has been a small business in our North Georgia area for decades, and they are a honey producer. They have a literal like menagerie of floral everything around their house. They actually live in a neighborhood. So when Amber and I got married, is the first neighborhood that we bought a house in together. I had heard these, you know, there were local, you know, honey producers in the neighborhood, and it was just like, at that time, I'm like, well, that's kind of different and unique, and then you try their honey, and you're like, oh, this is amazing. I don't have to go outside my neighborhood to get stuff like this. But there's a lot of people in the North Georgia community, the area, that this is where they get their honey from. And so you're going to hear a little bit about their story of how they got into this. And as I was thinking about this over the last few days of just kind of what to say on the front end, I kind of had to pause and realize that most of their journey and how they got here. So they have a combined, I didn't do the exact math, but something like a combined 180 years on planet Earth. I think Bob is 91. And I think his wife is 87, but I may be wrong. But anyway, they have been around more than a couple days on the planet. So they're going to share a little bit of their just, you know, life experience and wisdom in that, a little bit about their business, how they got into it. But as I was going through the thought process of kind of what to say and kind of what my takeaway from this was, I had to just kind of sit back and realize so much of their story that they're sharing and their business that they've got into and you know how they keep themselves young or you know young and active. Like if you met them when we met them for the first time, really had a conversation. If you had asked me how old they were, I would have been off by 20 years. Like literally, I would have been off by a couple decades because they look so good for their age, and you'll hear a little bit about that because I think I asked them specifically about that because it was just so startling how good they looked and you know they're sharp and all that, but the thing that I kind of took away from the conversation is most of their journey started through a conversation with a neighbor, decades ago. And it was somebody that they just got to know that they lived next to. And I mean, this is one of those things. There's that old saying of don't despise humble beginnings. I think it was actually taken from the Old Testament somewhere. But like, none of us really have an idea of where a simple conversation can lead. In my training of real estate agents over the last few years, I played a clip. If you have not seen this clip, you need to go on YouTube and find it. But it is the Rocky Sylvester Stallone origin story. And if you don't know this, this has nothing to do with podcast, you know, but it's a great story. So I'm going to share it anyway, because it's my podcast. So Sylvester Stallone is trying to, this is, you know, young Sly Stallone. He is dead broke. He was so broke. Some of you are like, I'm broke. He was so broke. He had to give away his dog because he couldn't afford to feed his dog and take care of his dog. You know, so young single guy trying to have a dog as a companion, can't afford that, and goes in to do this audition. And I don't think they picked him for that, but they asked him. They kind of liked him, but maybe not for that part. I don't remember the exact thing. But on his way out the door, they asked him, like, do you do anything else? And he had been in the process of writing what we know as Rocky One, the script of Rocky One. So he's not an established actor. He had just this dream of doing this. He's walking out of an audition that he didn't get, and they said, you know, do you do anything else? Because we kind of like you. And he said, well, I do some writing. And they were like, well, let us see what you have. And that one conversation at the end of a failed audition is why everyone on the planet knows who Sylvester Stallone is. It's why so many of us, like the, you know, Rocky IV is like your top three favorite movies of all time. That one conversation is where that came from. And maybe a little bit less of a dramatic and cinematic fashion. The conversation with a neighbor is how Bob and Bev got started. And in our current world where we have so much polarization deliberately by the media, if you're not aware of that, like, I don't know how to really help you. You know, there's an expression and has been around for decades. If it bleeds, it leads. Well, if it divides, it's even better. From the media's perspective. So having a cup of coffee with somebody that you don't know, you know, inviting a neighbor to, you know, have a picnic in the backyard with you. And when Bob and Bev were telling me their kind of story, it made me think of one of my there were a lot of memories that were not great. We don't ever want to have happen again from COVID, especially in the initial you know, shelter in place, the lockdowns and everything like that. That was just very very traumatic, stressful, and all those things for people. I remember one of my favorite memories from that. At least that first couple months, was sitting in my home office, was at in our house at the time, kind of in one of the front rooms, and we were in a cul-de-sac, and I was working, and I just saw out the window three neighbors that, so it was the other three neighbors in the cul-de-sac, and they had gotten their lawn chairs out and we're sitting in the grass. I'd never seen all three of our neighbors in the cul-de-sac out at the same time, just having a conversation, like just talking. And I mean, we have seen this. It's in movies in the 80s. So it's not like we don't have any reference point for that. But it was that, like, oh my gosh, this is neighbors talking and sitting with and having conversation and building relationships with neighbors. And this is this podcast episode. This is how this started. That's the origin story. It is the Sly Stallone walking out of the audition story. All started with a conversation from a neighbor that didn't look like them, didn't come from where they came from, and it's a beautiful story that has come from that. So I know that was a long intro, but I got to share Rocky's story, so like, there you go. You're welcome. All right, that's a long enough intro. You know how to find us, Facebook, Instagram. I'm trying to be better about posting little teaser sound bites and things like that from episodes. You can always email us at northgeorgialifepodcast@gmail.com. Facebook, Instagram is obviously North Georgia Life and a podcast. And with that, we'll get started. Welcome back to the North Georgia Life Podcast. Today, we are in a location in Hall County, and my guess is when you look it up online, you will probably recognize the label, because I'm certain if you've been anywhere in the North Georgia area, you have probably seen this label, Bob and Bev Bradbury with B&B Enterprises, which is kind of all things bees and Bradberries and honey. So y'all are here in Flowery Branch, but you didn't start here in Flowery Branch.
Correct.
So give us a little bit of history on where you came from and how you got to Flowery Branch, Georgia.
Well, we've been doing bees for about 46 years. Got started back in Bloomfield, New Jersey, where I was pastoring at the time. And one of the other fellas in the church and I were both avid organic gardeners. And one or the other of us said, it'd be kind of fun to have a couple of beehives, wouldn't it, for pollination purposes, et cetera. And so we agreed it would. And we heard about a woman whose dad had been a beekeeper, and he died, and she wanted to get rid of the two hives on his property. So we didn't know what we were doing. I think we had garden gloves on our hands, and I don't recall what kind of protection we had around our face and head, but we did know enough to go out after dusk so the bees would be back in the hive. And we stuffed some grass in the opening at the bottom. We had a borrowed pickup truck, and we had the two hives and roped them into the truck and brought them back. And it had been predetermined that they were going to be parked in our backyard. My wife and I, we had five kids at that point. All five of our kids had arrived. And so that got started. And then the very next year, 1977, we moved to Western PA. And my friend, Jack Allen, said he really didn't want to have them on his property. So we actually carted them out to Western PA. And
which, if you don't know Pennsylvania, it is a very long state. It is a long drive with bees.
Yeah. So we got out there, and we were there 20 years, and we maintained. But we just had, I don't think we ever had more than two hives out there. And then in 1997, we retired, moved here to Georgia. Two of our five kids were here. And nobody was left in Aliquippa. They had all moved away. So we set them up here, and then little by little began to enlarge the number. Initially, we were simply giving the honey away to family and friends, but there was more honey accruing than that was needed for that giveaway. So Bev suggested, why don't you take some of this honey up to the Gainesville farmer's market? And initially, I kind of poo-pooed the idea, but gave it some further thought and decided, yeah, I would try that. So,
and that was when that started?
That was 2005.
Okay.
2005. So we were there for several years. I don't recall when. A fellow by the name of Steve Thomas got another market going on Friday afternoons at Gainesville Square. Mm-hmm. And so we started taking our honey over there. There were two or three other honey vendors, as I recall, at the larger one under the pavilion in Gainesville. So we took ours over, and I was there with it for quite a while. And then our grandson took that market over. We, in the meantime, we're selling it in Flowery Branch as well as Suwannee, both the farmers markets and those locations. So we maintained that one till it's the Gainesville Square one, as of this year, that phased out. Now we have a lot of other things besides honey. We have probably at least 15 different products. We have seven flavors of honey. There's the wildflower, which is produced in our backyard, and that by far is the best one for allergies. Very effective, so long as people do their part and take a teaspoon a day. Then we also have orange blossom, gallberry, sourwood, tupelo, and then two infused honeys, lavender and habanero pepper. The tupelo is good for diabetics. It does not have dextrose, one of the four natural sugars, so it doesn't give a spike and therefore can be handled by diabetics. Huh. And it's got a wonderful flavor. Many non-diabetics gravitate to it. It's been hard to come by because true really with all honey, it depends on the weather exceedingly. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the tupelo tree, that grows in the swamps. And so where it's very strongly produced Tupelo, Mississippi, in the Panhandle, they build scaffolding. The beekeepers there build scaffolding and set their beehives on top of the scaffolding so it's not sitting in the swamp.
Wow.
And then when there's a honey flow in the Tupelo, the bees go up, collect the nectar and pollen, bring it back down and make the honey. But there's actually 350 different honey flavors in the U.S. We have a measly 7 of them, okay?
That's 6 more than most people. So.
Yeah. In addition to the honey, we make and sell elderberry syrup. We have that every day. My wife and I take that. It's a great prophylactic to protect against the flu and virus and colds. Well, we sell bee pollen. We purchase that and sell it, and that's an excellent resource for lowering inflammation in your body. It has all kinds of benefits, so that's good. We harvest propolis, and the propolis is something the bees make. It's referred to as bee glue. The bees, and it's made up of resin and beeswax and a variety of other things. They actually collect that from conifer trees that are in the area. So depending on where it's at in the world, whatever the conifers are would make it a different color. And they've discovered, I have known actually for hundreds of years, the medical benefits in other countries, in South Africa and Brazil and the Eastern European countries. They're very, very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And they use it every day. We have so many people at our markets from all over the world now, and any of those from Hungary, Romania, Ukraine, the Eastern Europe, oh, you've got propolis, and they zing to it. We have it in two formats. We collect it, mix it with 190 proof alcohol, and I have two jugs out here right now, and I shake the jugs 3 times a day for 10 days, and then run it through a sieve. And I have two formats, a spray form that it will knock out a sore throat in a couple hours. Goes after canker sores, cold sores, things like that. Anything around the throat, the mouth, even up the nose. And I've had very excellent success, as have other people. And the other one, and that one, I should say, has some peppermint essential oil in it and honey. So it's very easy to spray and take. It has a pleasant flavor. The other is the tincture, and that is powerful, very powerful. It'll kill colon cancer cells. It has all kinds of applications, and people, I have a picture of my son-in-law, his left hand between the first finger and thumb. He had a deep cut from a construction accident. And his wife, our daughter, took him to the ER, and the doctor there tried to retrieve a splinter that was inside. And he had his finger up to his knuckle, couldn't get it out.
Ugh.
And he said, well, you really need hand surgery, but your blood pressure is off the charts, so we can't do it now. You'll have to come back. Well, in the meantime, we had already scheduled a trip to Florida, and we went down, and Michael, our son-in-law, who has a very high tolerance for pain, began putting 2 drops. Remember now, this stuff is 190 proof alcohol.
Yeah, that'll wake you up.
2 drops of that a day. And I have a picture of beginning and end. And Becky, our daughter, took a picture, and I don't know if she skipped a couple of days or what, but the 19th day, it was completely healed. It looked like nothing had ever happened to it.
Wow.
And there was no suturing at all. And people see that. Wow, that is utterly amazing.
Yeah.
So it has tremendous healing power property. There's a web page called Bee Buzz, B-E-E, second word, B-U-Z-Z. And you sign on to that, and they send you updated stuff every week to 10 days of new research that's been done. And they have products that they're selling. But it's very, very effective in terms of the propolis and the royal jelly and the bee pollen and the honey itself.
I remember hearing, and I don't remember where the first
place I heard it or saw it was that for pretty much all, I would say, like native indigenous people, they used honey for womb care.
Uh-huh.
Because it kept infection out, like it kept things from getting in, sores or cuts or whatever, and it actually helped the whatever the molecules or compounds or whatever in honey itself actually helped the skin to heal faster because you mm-hmm. didn't have it drying out while at the same time it was being protected from the outside elements or whatever.
Right.
I have not done that myself yet to see if that's tried and true. But that is interesting that that's there's still a very real application to wound care in this day and age.
That's right. And they use it in hospitals for burns. Hmm. It's very, very effective. It takes the pain out, and it just helps the new tissue to develop. See, honey, amazingly, has hydrogen peroxide in it, so germs cannot
really?
Exist in it. Yeah. Germs will not be able to live in it. Mm-hmm. They consider it a perfect food from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make a very wonderful beverage, half gallon at a time, using a half a cup of honey, our wildflower honey, a half a cup of apple cider vinegar, usually Bragg's or one mm-hmm. of the organic ones. And recently, the last several years, I'll take about a finger full of ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you put some warm water to dissolve the honey. It's because you're going to be adding ice, mm-hmm. and so you don't want to dilute it. So what I do is put some ice after this thing's all stirred up, and then fill it up, and it is delicious. Mm.
I bet it's good for you.
It is. It is for runners and so on.
Yeah.
It helps to replace the electric lights mm-hmm. that you lose if you're running, mm-hmm. you know, running or mowing the lawn or cutting the sweat some way.
So you started doing organic gardening before organic was a thing.
We started in 1963. Our next door neighbor in Bloomfield, New Jersey, was a native Jamaican.
Hmm.
And he had grown up on an organic farm when it was not a popular thing
mm-hmm.
Way back. And so we were there 15 years, and he taught us all kinds of innovative things about gardening. And we bought our first grinder to make our compost. We made compost, and I would have truckloads, big truckloads of leaves delivered in the backyard,
mm-hmm.
and we would use those. And I had a ton of them behind the garage, and the kids would climb up on top of the garage and jump off and had a ball in the leaves, you know, and learned how to make the compost, which helped greatly, and had access to. It was either cow or horse manure, or maybe some of both, that really helped.
So it was your neighbor that was the Jamaican that was the first one that really kind of helped you understand both the application side of how to garden like that, but also did he kind of explain some of the health benefits? Or, you know, we think of it differently now because we're more familiar with the commercialized industrial, you know, quote, farming versus how farming was always done by and large for most people forever in terms of how food was grown and produced
right.
and harvested and all those sorts of things. You kind of look back and it was like he was kind of the first domino that led you to where you're at now?
I would think in terms of gardening, that would be the case, because so much of the health of the veggies or fruit is tied in with the health of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's world, so many are using the commercial fertilizers and so on, and that just does not do the job.
Yeah.
You know, we have three stages of collecting our compost. We have a little attractive bucket right here in the kitchen next to the sink, and all of our coffee grinds and eggshells and banana peels, all that kind of stuff goes in there. And then now I have 2 5-gallon buckets in the back deck. And when they're filled up, then we take those down. And I've got 4 55-gallon drums down where we do the composting. And we fill those up. And then when we make the compost, I have a machine. And we have leaves, plenty of leaves. I've had access to chicken manure. And leftovers from the previous year, the corn stalks and that kind of thing. So we put in the grinder there, we'll put in leaves and the chicken manure and the compost stuff from the house and the leftover stuff from last year and grind that stuff up. The temperature can actually get up to 150 degrees.
Yes, I say it'll get hot.
Very, very hot.
Chicken manure is a high nitrogen.
That's right. It'll do that in 2 days.
Wow.
When you grind it up, the smaller the part. So we can have a finished compost product in 3 weeks.
For anyone who is environmentally conscious, we hear stories over the course of time every year about the bee population in the United States. For an average ordinary person who maybe, you know, might be in an apartment, might be, older, younger, whatever, is not going to, have a beehive of their own out in their backyard, but wants to do whatever they can to help the bee population, grow and survive. And, if it doesn't survive, we're all toast.
That's right.
I mean, that's the end of the day. Like they're as critical to life as oxygen, just not as immediate. What would you tell, one or two, a handful of things for someone who wants to be involved in making the situation better, not worse, that is maybe not going to have that hive of their own?
I think we try to encourage people not to use insecticides, for one thing. 7, for instance, is deadly. They do all the spraying for these days in summer for mosquitoes. That's deadly. All that has to happen is for the wind just to pull that stuff down towards our hives. We have already lost a bunch of our hives.
I was going to ask you the transition because I don't know anybody that has had bees or knows anybody that's had bees that has not had issues with them leaving or dying or something like that. How often? And you have how many hives here?
Well,
now?
At full strength, we have 30.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I was watching a thing, I guess it was on YouTube the other day, from Bob Binney. He's a big operator up here. And he was going to one of his yards, and there had been a lot of dead bees, and he was convinced it was from insecticides that were being utilized out there. He said bees will fly easily 2 to 3 miles, and they've actually clocked them as far as 5 miles away from the hive. And so honey has been checked out, and they've seen, I'm sure, over 100 different insecticides in the honey.
Yeah.
So that's what we're facing in today's world. And Einstein is purported to have said, if we ever lose our bees, he gives the human race 4 years. Others have taken issue with that and said, it won't be that bad. But the amount of the variety of foods will be tremendously decreased, and they'll be very expensive. And I've seen a documentary one time in a grocery store where they just went in and panned with the camera all of the different fruits and veggies in there, and then turned the camera off and took out all of those that required pollination and put it back on. There wasn't much left. Honey, the bees are tremendously necessary. So what we would, when we go to do presentations at garden clubs and that kind of thing, we have a list of the different kinds of plants and shrubs and flowers that people can grow to encourage bees to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important. So in some states, you'll find on the highways in the middle there, wildflowers mm-hmm. growing mm-hmm. and so on. And if you were to, God, not have been able to get out of your car and check them out, invariably that draws bees and so on. So there's a lot of things that can be planted.
Yeah. For us, we don't actively garden, certainly not to the extent y'all do, but the transition to organic, I mean, really once you start looking a layer or two deep with almost everything that's in your big box hardware stores or, yeah. you know, your commercial nursery, I don't want to dime anybody's business out, yeah. but it's kind of like a pharmaceutical company. You're symptom managing. You're not really dealing with the problem. You're right. just trying to
right.
fix the...
Put a Band-Aid on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're trying to put a Band-Aid, but the Band-Aid is a chemical.
Yeah.
And that chemical will have unintended consequences.
That's right.
So when you start looking at alternatives, there's like very effective alternatives. And for us, for instance, like we stopped using anything that had glyphosate in it for years now. That's the herbicide and Roundup that most people know the brand name of. When I tell people like what we use as like weed killer alternatives, they're like, yeah, but the weeds come back. I'm like, well, the weeds come back after Roundup. Like
yeah.
they're weeds.
Yeah.
Like they're going to grow back. But you can use you know, very simple, you know, most people have the stuff to make insect deterrents, herbicides, those sorts of things in their house already. They're very inexpensive,
mm-hmm.
And they're not going to hurt anybody. They're not going to kill anybody
right.
because
right.
you already have them in your house,
right.
and a lot of them you already consume. So you were if I did the math right, you were born during the Great Depression,
1932.
Kind of transitioning for a minute out of the bee. World and into just normal life. From having lived long enough, neither my wife nor I could believe you and your wife are as old as you are, because I would have guessed 70. And you said part of that is genes, but part of that is just your overall lifestyle. You don't live like most people live. So you probably look a whole lot better than most people look at 91. From a life and a health, but also just a 91 years of experiencing all of the currents of the world, for people who are young and then maybe people who are in that kind of midlife season of life, one, two, three things that you would encourage someone to do or reinforce, maybe something they've already heard or known, having been born during one of the hardest periods in the country.
Yeah, I was the youngest of five. I still have a sister left. My next older brother died early August, but he would have been 98 in November, and my sister will be 100 in November. So again, genes are good. The two that had passed earlier, my oldest sister lived to 89 and my brother 85. But I'd say, you know, having learned about organic gardening back in 1963, we've had a good garden for all these years. So that represents a lot of what we've eaten. Doesn't mean we don't go to the store and buy other stuff, obviously, but we do enjoy the product from our yard. So that's been one thing. Two, I am a Christian, and I would say clearly that Jesus Christ is the cornerstone of our marriage. Mm. And so we've worked as a team. We enjoy what we do. And Bev has a strong work ethic. She would fight me if I tried to mow the lawn. She loves to mow the lawn herself. And she really does. She has a tremendous work ethic. And a good part of the garden in one section is her domain where she plants her stuff, and then I do a bunch of the other stuff. So we enjoy getting out. We enjoy playing in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But there is real science
yeah.
behind that for our one's immune system. And we've known of cases where a mother seemingly was protecting her kids from getting dirty. And the oldest daughter really got into serious trouble from some medical issues that developed because her immune system had never been really developed, you know. Yeah. And so I think it is very important when we've gone on mission journeys, the big thing is if you drop food in the ground, if you pick it up within 4 seconds, it's still fine to eat. I enjoy getting out in the dirt, and I have some of it underneath my fingernails. I think that's been a factor that has been helpful. So eating proper food and walking and so on, not as much as we should. But we have done some arduous things, too. Back in the year 2000, we did a 17-day backpacking excursion out in the Wind River Range of Wyoming, carrying a 70-pound pack, each of us.
So you would have been in your 70s?
I was 69.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. My son, Doug, is a professor at Geneva College in Western PA, and he's had the training to take college students on these backpacking excursions. And so he was our leader, and Bev and I, and then our middle daughter, Becky, so the four of us, and we were there 78. And I broke my ankle the eighth day out, but we thought it was a sprain, and he taped it tightly. And so he would actually carry my pack ahead and then come back. I was able to do the horizontal and going up.
The down
mm-hmm. on the final day, we had 36 switchbacks, and that was a different kind of experience. And I thought, maybe I should have this thing checked out since I hadn't had it. So I went to the doctor and the x-ray, and he said, good news and bad news. Bad news is that it wasn't a sprain, it was a break. Good news, it's 80% healed.
Wow.
So just stay off the mountains down in the Andes for a while. But what I learned from that is our bodies are wonderfully made.
Mm-hmm.
And they can put up with a lot of junk, mm-hmm. you know, really, if you allow them to heal and so on. Yeah. So I was fortunate the bones were in perfect sync.
Wow.
And that my son had taped it up very tightly.
Wow. Hmm.
But he's got, you know, he has five kids too. And the two oldest boys this past March traveled on their bikes from the Pacific to the Atlantic in 18 days, raising funds for Haiti H2O. They rode their bikes.
18 days.
Yeah. There was another fella there were three of them. And then there was another guy in a van who had extra parts and extra bikes if theirs broke down. But they raised about $15,000 for Haiti H2O.
Wow.
But I would say, really, the spiritual is huge in our own relationship because we're both stubborn, and we often kiddingly said, we'd probably gotten divorced 50 years ago if we didn't know the Lord. When we go to the markets, we pray on the way down that the Lord will lead us to some bruised and broken people that we can have conversations with, and there's a lot of them around.
I'll say, we got a few of them.
So it's a ministry,
mm-hmm.
and we see it and approach it from that way. And that's we have some of the best times.
Mm-hmm.
This is an enjoyable time of life for us when we can just enjoy conversing with people and finding out what's going on and so on.
And for being in what what would be for most people a
slowing down.
A slowing down.
Yeah.
You were telling me about before we started your schedule for the next last week and then this week and really kind of the rest of the month. And sounds like a full-time job almost.
Well,
but it's not.
I have to go out and plant veggies today.
Okay.
I've got a bunch of them to put in, so I have to rototill the area and then put a bunch of. I'll be planting lettuce and kale and arugula and broccoli, cauliflower, but about 10 different veggies that'll
good for the winter.
For the winter,
yeah. So you said you have 30 active hives.
Well, that's or, what or that's when the high point. Full. Now some of them have died off, so I have to go out and treat them. Mm-hmm. And before I treat them, I'll put moth crystals in because moths come. If they lay their eggs in there, it plays havoc, and you end up burning the frames that they're not usable. Mm. Now, the other alternative is, so that's by leaving them actually on site, mm-hmm. having been killed by the mites. That's a biggie, the varroa mite and so on. You have to treat for that. And but again, these different insecticides that take their toll. So you have a choice, either to bring them up, and we have a storage area underneath our deck where we keep a lot, the largest majority of our extra honey supers.
I feel like this is one of those things that a lot of people have probably thought about at some point, having just a hive, having, mm-hmm. you know, your own little family, right. you know, extremely local, local honey there in the backyard. Any just beginner tips that you would give someone if they're contemplating doing that, but
yes,
it's kind of a daunting thing?
I would suggest a couple of things. Number one, depending upon where they live, they would do well to call the local extension office, find out where the local county beekeepers association meets, where and when, and start attending meetings, because there's a lot of distilled wisdom in those who have been longtime beekeepers, and they would find out if this is really something they're interested in, because a lot of people think it's kind of romantic or, you know, whimsical and so on. There's work, and you got to be inside the hive. Mm. And you also probably you would do well to know whether or not you're allergic to bee stings.
Yes.
Because we were training a gal to take over. I had a young lady for a little over a year who was really good. She graduated from college, and she was planning to go to grad school, but she wanted to spend a year doing that. She really was sharp. She had graduated summa cum laude and really knew her way around the computer with all the techie stuff that was necessary. And so when we knew that she was leaving, she was training somebody else, and the gal got stung here, and her face swelled up, and she was out of commission for 4 days and decided this was not her forte. You know, so a person needs to know whether or not they're going to have just a little simple. I've had bees come in under the thing and walk over my mustache and back over and decide I'm not the flower they thought, and they went back out, you know. Well, recently I got stung right here, all right? And this is a couple of weeks ago, and I put a little propolis on there, and not only did it take the sting away, it took the swelling away. So, but anyway, so I would say that they needed to know whether or not they have a serious problem with stings. But then they have to be able to come and actually, with the smoker, go inside the hive and check the bees. And I had a person, probably not more than a mile or a mile and a half, want to come down and just kind of observe. But she was standing from the piano, and here's the hive. I said, come on, you got to come over here and look. And she had the protection on, and she was pretty leery. Now, mm-hmm. for somebody brand new, that's understandable.
Right.
But you got, at some point, willing to actually check out the hive, you know, and if you're going to be a beekeeper, that's just a part of it. But then if the person decides after checking it out and going to the bee meetings and so on, I always recommend that they buy two hives, not one, because then you've got some comparison. If you just have one and you see a few bees going in and out, you might think it's fine. But now the one next to it's a thriving highway, and you got tons. Then you got, what's going on over here? Is the queen alive? Is she not doing her job? Because the bees in the hive, if she's not laying have a good bee pattern and some brood pattern and so on, they will lay new queen cells to replace her.
Mutiny.
Yeah, there's mutiny.
Mutiny in the hive.
Right. And some hives have a queen mean, and of course she passes her attitude on to all her progeny. So I've had hives that have had an attitude. That's what I refer, that's a hive with an attitude, but I didn't liquidate it because they were great honey producers, and they were bringing it in like crazy. But I had a buddy of mine, and we were going down, and I said, now, that hive there has got an attitude. He said, I know, I've been stung three times, and I'm not even there yet. You know? So it's an interesting thing. But we refer to them as our gals or our gal, you know, because in late May and June and so on, a strong hive will have 50 to 70,000 bees in it.
Wow.
One hive. So people say, how many bees do you have? I said, do you really mean that? You mean how many hives? Yeah. But strong hive, easily 50 to 70,000. But again, when the queen is doing her job, you take the outer cover and inner cover off, and the bees are just as calm and so on. If it's queenless or the queen is not doing her job, it's you can actually hear it within the hive.
One of the things that I like to ask at the end of, towards the end of every episode is what I call a lightning round question. It has nothing to do with anything we've talked about. But given when you were growing up and all the life that has transpired in just your early years, do you remember the first movie that you saw in the theaters?
When I was a kid growing up, we didn't go to the movies that much, although Saturday afternoons were the matinees, you know, when you'd go down and the Three Stooges or something like that. We watched some of those, and probably Tom Mix and some of the Westerns. One of them that wasn't the first one I ever saw, but one that I think is my favorite film, is Sergeant York. Did you ever see that? Was it with Gary Cooper?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was a World War I film. And he was raised, a true story. There's actually a museum over in Tennessee about his life and so on. And he had been raised on a farm. His mom was a widow, sweet gal. And but he was very good. He was a marksman with a gun. But he had a problem with killing, going to actually into battle to kill. And so, long story short, he was given permission to go home and work that whole thing through with his pastor. And he went back, and he was in action, and the Germans were mowing down his fellow soldiers, scores of them, but they were in a position with their machine guns are really killing. And he got up and he began to maneuver around, and he ended up, I think he might have killed 30 or so, but he ended up single-handedly getting like 140 prisoners.
Wow.
Yeah, and quite amazing.
Wow.
Quite amazing story. Now that's been an amazing film. I have it in the old VHS.
Yeah, I'll have to find that. That sounds... movies that are based on a true story are about the only things we watch anymore.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just a very predictable plot line.
Right.
but it's also about the only movies that my wife stays awake for. Because... Normally, she's out in about 15 minutes.
Snooze land, yeah.
Real quick, before we wrap up, the best ways for people to find you guys, places you go on a regular basis, website.
Well, we do have a website, Buy Georgia Honey.
Buy Georgia Honey.
B-U-Y, spell out Georgia, Honey. They can't actually order online. It doesn't have the capacity, but it gives a full array of our products. And I don't think I even gave you all those, but...
So your website, Buy Georgia Honey.
Buy Georgia Honey. We will be doing, Lord willing, the Flowery Branch and Suwannee markets through the winter. And then there are these festivals And this fall, especially, we do the biggies. We did the Swanee Fest. That was in September. That was a huge one. And we have a lot of people come to the house. We make moisturizing cream, lip balm, elderberry syrup.
What's the, for people who can't maybe get to a farmer's market weekend or a festival that you guys are at, what's the best ways? Obviously, people who are here local that can come to the house. Best to call, I would assume, make sure that someone's...
Well, if they go online and they Google local honey, ours comes up. We're constantly getting new customers who come and they want to know, do you still have honey? Yes.
Yep.
And they often come to the house.
Thank you guys for what you do, for being a local staple here in the North Georgia area.
This is the North Georgia Life Podcast. Embrace life where you live.